Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Jonathan.
First question, right off the bat, how are shared universes different from franchises like Star Wars or James Bond?
Okay, well, a shared universe is a shared world, and what you can actually have there are different characters and different people in the world, basically the same. So, for example, you might have the shared Star Wars universe, and that might be things like films, TV shows, but they're actually set in the same world in which they're actually created. Now, the thing about this is that, for example, you might have, say, Star Trek, and that universe itself may actually be controlled by different people in that universe, and there may be crossovers between film and TV. Now, you would expect, for example, there to be a continuation, say, if you were doing it in the time period of Jean-Luc Picard, who's actually coming back to make his new TV show.
Yeah, Sir Patrick Stewart, right?
He's still doing it. Now, that universe, there are actually rules that actually will carry forward from one film to another film, from maybe the film to the TV show. So he'll be the captain in that particular universe, even though he's now made films, for example, you know, the old Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
And the TV shows, which were based on the 80s Star Trek films, but they actually use the same universe, the same ship, the same crew. Now, in a franchise, you actually may go off and do other things, and the franchise may actually have not film or TV shows. You might have comic books and tie-ins, and so the franchise may plug into the universe, but the franchise itself is a little bit more open, and it's actually more for commercial type of exploitation. So there is a overlap between the two, but the franchise is more for, you know, marketing purposes, and part of the franchise that actually may differ just a little bit from the original universe. Now, the other good example of a not so police shared universe is Doctor Who.
Right. Yeah, there's the new one and then there's the old one, and I know fans are polarized between the two.
That's right. So what happens there is their universes may be a little different. They don't quite police the boundaries. In fact, one of the things about Doctor Who is that they may actually change the universe around, but the franchise is still the same. He's still got the TARDIS and all that sort of thing. He makes, you know, they can't necessarily reboot the thing, but there are some reboots around. They can actually reboot a franchise. So there is a lot of overlap between the two, but if you think of it more as the universe as the more creative side, and where you already had some exposure to it, and you then have a knowledge of that which you bring to a new TV show or a new movie or a new comic book or whatever.
It's interesting you mentioned overlap, because I know there's definitely crossover elements involved, like, you know, board games, even like Dungeons and Dragons, and video games like Grand Theft Auto definitely rely on creating, I guess, a backdrop for the storylines.
Well, they do. Now, the thing is, the universe can actually change platforms. You can actually have the universe in a game, for example, and some of these have been adapted from, like, some games have been moved into films and vice versa, although there's a long-standing argument that probably adapt a game really well to a movie anyway. But the thing, though, is the universe is still necessarily the same. You wouldn't change some of the locations of certain games. So if they made a Bioshock movie, they're not going to change the location of that particular game if they were going to make a movie out of Bioshock. So the thing, though, is that you wouldn't want to tamper with the universe too much, because there'd be a bit of a misrecognition. So that's been one of the issues. For example, what do you do with reboots of, say, shows like Star Trek? Do you start from scratch, or do you build on what was there before?
Yeah. So when it comes to storytelling, I think J.R.R. Tolkien, he reimagined the whole world of Middle-earth for Lord of the Rings, and I quote, creating enchantment is what he called it, and that enchantment can be disconnected from the story and the narrative. So, for example, the Silmarillion. And most of the stuff in the Silmarillion, like entire lands and languages, aren't even shown in the main six Peter Jackson films. And the same, I guess, can be said for Star Wars and all the sci-fi technology that enchants it. So does this concept of world-building, I guess this intentional uncharted territory, help other authors build upon that work in terms of, I guess, filling in the blanks for an expanded universe?
Okay, if there are actually certain roles in that universe, and I'm thinking of the Tolkien universe, which have been adaptions, like film adaptations, adaptations from the actual book itself, you actually have to stay within those rules that are actually established within the world. You can't actually change the rules of that world. And the elaborateness of world building, you know, from the shared languages, you know, the constructed languages, to the kinds of inhabitants of that world or to the landscape, even something like Game of Thrones share, you know, the universe there, the world that's actually created there in Game of Thrones. Once you've actually established that in your first book or first TV show or first movie, even though you may, in the contemporary period, have a license to, say, create another spin-off because of the franchise thing, we were talking about how that was kind of a more business approach. If somebody gave you permission to write a novel based on the Star Trek universe, you'll still have to stay within the world that's actually already been established for that. So you may actually have what's called a Bible or a show Bible that you'll actually be given to create your story, but you have to set it within the rules of that universe.
Like a canon, right?
It'll be the canon, yeah. You should know the canon. There's actually, Star Trek is sort of canon, something like Doctor Who has more or less certain shows that are actually important, but again, it's one of those interesting examples where the canon is a bit looser than in other franchises.
Right. Now, one of Tolkien's friends, C.S. Lewis, also had many intricate backstories for his world of Narnia that drew metaphors from Christian theology. So when it comes to drawing fantasy inspiration from history and reality, how has Marvel movies, coming back to the MCU, and by extension, I guess, Marvel Comics, revived this remixing of real-life mythology in world-building?
Okay, there's actually two universes when you actually talk about comparing Marvel to, say, DC, because actually the DC universe was actually established around 1934, and that was more based on characters that were gods and mythical beings.
Yeah.
And when Marvel came along about 1938-39, what happened there was that they actually had the idea of having their superheroes based on a theme of mankind trying to achieve higher power. So
yeah. I've heard it said that DC is like gods in men form, and then Marvel's like men with God's powers.
Yes, that's the way to do it, or trying to do that. Now, there are characters who don't quite fit into that, but it was one way to differentiate the two universes, to actually have some sort of competition between the two.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that when you actually think about the DC, which is the Superman, Batman sort of
Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, yeah?
Yes, you've got Superman, who, as a baby, he was delivered to Earth in a capsule and raised as a human, but he still has godlike features, and he was trying to adapt, in a sense he's a god trying to aspire to be a human being. Now, these DC universe sometimes were a little darker, in a sense. They were tied to the mythology, but at least there was some sort of recognizability about it. So, like Aquaman, obviously, has associations with mythology and Atlantis and all that sort of thing. So you actually had an established mythology to tap into for DC characters. Now, when we went into Marvel, theirs was, again, more about characters who ended up having their humanity enhanced by things like accidental spider bites or exposure to radiation, you know, that sort of thing.
The mutant X gene.
Yeah, and so when we go into the Marvel cinematic universe, or before that, just the Marvel comics and their world and the teams that were in Marvel, it's really about human beings coming to terms with their new powers. And, you know, there's a now famous line in from Spider-Man, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, which Peter Parker tells his thing to his uncle in the car.
Yeah, the very first one, Sam Raimi's 2002 Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, so even though there have been some reiterations of Spider-Man, new actors playing the character itself hasn't really changed, though he's more recognizable of the Marvel characters, and he's a good example of how an ordinary young man's world is changed by an exposure to something that he had no control over. His world literally changed, but there was no previous mythology based around spider bites, for example.
Right.
Whereas in the DC world, there were associations with characters and previous mythological characters, which audiences who were watching the TV shows in the 50s and 60s and those who read the comics would have recognized it a bit early, you know, because it came around the 1930s, but they would be aware of the mythology, you know, Greek mythology. That.
Right. Now, of course, a literary world building has definitely been around for a while, but how does the MCU influence the way it translates from the page to the silver screen?
The MCU is an interesting one. It's actually a very successful translation. It's actually very well policed, and the boundaries are very well established. Just trying to get his name right. Kevin
Feige.
Who actually became the president of Marvel Studios in 2007, I think. He's actually a plan for that because kind of an ongoing process. So as long as the basis of the universe doesn't change, he can then have different directors, for example, give their own unique spin on a particular kind of character, like Thor's. Maybe, you know, Waititi, who directed Thor Ragnarok, gave it a bit of humor.
Yeah, it made him a lot more human.
They're very much more human, and the thing about that is a bit more entertaining, but there's actually a continuity, things like visual style, from one movie to another.
Yeah.
this is the thing about the cinematic universe, is that there's a variation in terms of, say, how you explore certain characters. Given the director has an opportunity to explore certain things and do it in a certain way, but at the same time, you're not going to change the look of Thor from one movie to the other. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to change the look of, say, some of the characters. Like Iron Man is not going to change the look and the style of delivery, because now it becomes associated with a particular actor, which is another characteristic of the MCU. That's been raised a few times, because what happens when somebody leaves the role and what happens then? I mean, for example, in the DC universe, we're going to have a new Superman.
And a new Batman, if I'm not wrong, too.
Yeah, and that just popped up in terms of, say, the actors who've made the character of Spider-Man come alive. There's a bit of different actor who sort of play that, and so there is some sort of comparisons. Overall, it's very well policed by Feige, and these are planned development, and this has been really successful, and DC has been trying to emulate the same kind of control over it. They thought when Wonder Woman came out, they might have a particular style which they could carry through to other movies, but it's still a one-off and it still hasn't quite worked. So having somebody like Feige in charge means that when you had the movie like Black Panther come along, it was within that universe, and there was an established audience for that, in the sense they were expecting it to stay within the MCU, but it also meant that it was a movie that developed that universe a little bit more, but have a new take on, say, African Americans in the MCU, because there wasn't too many of those in the past. So, as I say, it's often laid at the feet of Feige, the guy who created that phase development of the MCU, but it's more than just one man's show. It's the whole plan development of TV shows, movies, comic books, that sort of thing.
Right. Thank you so much. I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for being on the show.
Hope it all goes well for you.
Thank you.